Hello and welcome to the big British castle. We hope you're having lots of jolly fun. Please obey the rules when you're inside the castle, or we'll jolly have to throw you jolly out upon your ass.
And drugs are very dangerous and highly addictive.
Exactly.
So stay away from love.
What kind of song is that to play at the top of a breakfast show on a Saturday morning?
When children are listening?
Children are listening, they're going to go, oh, love is a drug.
They're going to start snorting powdered love.
And they're going to go out and start falling in love and getting high on love. It's a disgrace. And then, you know, as soon as you start with love, a couple of years down the line, you're down in the gutter there, moaning and crying about it.
You graduate to a harder drug. What's the harder drug?
Lust.
Lust. Caution.
And exactly. And then after that, it's all filth and passion and that kind of thing.
Hello, this is Adam and Joe. Happy Saturday morning. This is BBC Six Music. I'm Joe.
I'm Adam.
Yeah.
That's
all you need to know, really.
I thought you were going somewhere with that.
No!
No, turned out you weren't.
We've got great music coming up. We're going to be revealing the winner of last week's Song Wars pretty soon.
Oh, yeah.
Text the Nation, all sorts of chittle and chattle and chottle.
We went to a thing together this week, and we're going to tell you about it later on. We won our award. We won. Do you remember we were talking about this last week? And we're going to tell you all about what happened at the award ceremony later on in the program. But now, this is a new track, right, from the Raconteurs, Top Yourself.
Yes, it's from Consolers of the Lonely, which was released on the 25th of March.
So we start with a song about drugs, and the next song is called Top Yourself. What kind of message are we sending out to the young, impressionable people?
Very, very clear one.
Yeah.
Drugs and death.
Drugs and death. Here's the Raconteurs. That's the Raconteurs, of course, being Brendan Benson and Jack White of the White Stripes. That's a track from their new album, Consolers of the Lonely, and it's called Top Yourself, which is a shame. That album was released last week. Have you bought that yet, Joe?
Of course. I've got, I've actually made a suit out of copies of it.
Yeah.
A sort of flappy plastic suit.
Is that the one you're wearing now?
Yeah.
It's looking good.
Thanks
man.
A lot, man.
Looks really wicked.
Yeah, I love that album so much.
Yeah.
The thing about that song, though, is he's talking about euthanasia.
Z.
And some kind of a pact where two people have decided to assist one another in exiting this mortal coil, this miserable place that we call the world.
The stinky dog box.
And he's saying, how are you going to do it if I've already done it?
Right.
Isn't he?
You know, there's a film that tackles that exact problem.
I'm sure there's some kind of Heath Robinson-style device, like in Omen 3, when we probably shouldn't talk about this sort of thing. Do you remember that bit in Omen 3 where he's got the shotgun?
Right.
And he's pointed it at himself.
It's the kind
of
thing.
Bit of string that goes around the office.
Yeah.
And the other end is tied to the door.
Yeah.
And the secretary just comes in to deliver him a document.
Oh, that's right.
Excuse me, sir. Telephone.
He can't be bothered
his
to do it himself.
Over the back wall.
It's the same logic as when you've got a wobbly tooth. And,
yes,
your
the
mum
sort of Dickensian method.
Yeah, did your mum ever do that?
No contemporary mums do that. Your mum didn't, did she?
She did.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, she did.
That's not even Victorian.
Tied a piece of string to the wobbly tooth.
She didn't.
And tied the other end of the string to the door handle.
But that was the 70s? 80s even?
The 70s.
The 70s. They had dentists in the 70s.
Not right.
And drugs.
Way.
That's shocking.
It was very wobbly.
I want to get your mum on the phone.
I was anxious about it, obviously, but it was just hanging on a thread, the thing.
That's ridiculous. Maybe that would be a good, Text the Nation would be like self-surgery.
So we did self-surgery, didn't we?
Did we do self-surgery?
Yeah, with the cannibals.
Not in a... Did we? We did it in movies, I think.
Right, you mean actual
But we did an actual
instances.
Self-surgery.
Right.
There probably aren't that many, but for instance, trying to get a splinter out, you know, moments when you actually try and operate on yourself.
And get out the scalpel.
There are some good stories.
Start digging.
We don't want to encourage that sort of thing, but sometimes, I mean, that's a very good one.
Yeah.
Tied a string around your tooth, then slammed the door. What kind of a family do you come from? Sort of a caveman family.
A little bit, yeah. My dad's like a little caveman, very old caveman.
So listen, listeners, in a second we're going to reveal the winner of last week's Kate Nash Song Wars competition. We both wrote parodies of Kate Nash. I use the word parody in the loosest possible term.
I was going to say.
And I think it's going to be a close one this week.
I hope so. You know, I would certainly be very angry indeed if I lost and it was a walkover. I'd be absolutely furious. I'm not going to pretend I wouldn't be.
Well, there's something to look forward to. Rig the vote. We like a bit of fury.
You know, if it was close, for example, if you won and it was 55% of the vote that you won, I could live with that, but I'd still be a little bit grumpy.
So you reckon over a 5% difference and you'll be annoyed?
Yeah, I would say so.
Really? Can you be guaranteed to go into a rage?
60-40, I would just be sulky.
All right, so hang on, you're changing it now. So 10% sulky.
Sulky. 70-30... Very aggressive, very defensive indeed, and chippy.
All right.
For the rest of the show. 80-20, I'd be angry.
What's, hang on, aggressive and chippy?
Yeah, a little, and sort of sarcastic.
Chippy and sarcastic. Well, you're being very controlled. I'm just writing these down so I can hold him to them.
80-20, angry. 90-10, absolutely furious, spitting with rage. Livid. Unable to speak. I'd have to back
That's
off from the
mic. That's happened in the past, hasn't it? It happened in the past. And the fury sort of resonated for the next few weeks.
That's right.
Like a kind of, you know, I don't know the words, but like
fart.
A fart. Or what do you call it when a nuclear bomb goes off and you get the ripples?
Oh, yes.
Ripples. Nuclear ripples.
That's exactly
it's a new ice cream from Walls. Here's a free play from you, isn't it, Alex?
Yeah. This is Guided by Voices. You know, I like to play a bit of Guided by Voices every few months, and this is from one of their best and most consistent albums, Do the Collapse. This is a track called Picture Me Big Time.
I don't care about that either. I don't care about anything.
That was Weezer.
I work for Six Music. I'm into indie music and rock. I just don't care about anything.
Do you
That's
push,
the attitude.
If you're sort of walking past something, will you just push it over?
I push envelopes whenever I see them.
Yeah. That was Weezer with Buddy Holly. That's a classic song. And we just played it. And now it's time.
Who will win the song wars today? Perhaps it will be Adam, or it could be Joe. Either one. You will be the one who decides.
Except, of course, you weren't allowed to text, I think, were you? We asked them not to text. And we asked them to email. You were allowed to text, but it's so confusing. The rules of the castle are getting ever more labyrinthine.
Yeah, I was quite cheeky about it last week.
In an effort not to rip off the public, it's what? Just becoming very, very complicated.
I was rude about it, and I said rude things about the BBC last week, and another friend of ours, who Adam and I were out for dinner with last night, who also works for the BBC, brought it up, was a bit shocked by it.
Being cheeky about the castle?
Yeah, thinking that maybe, you know, and there was a cautionary note in his voice saying, you know, careful,
Cornish. Watch out, because you'll get chucked
Watch
out.
Watch out, you'll get thrown out of the big British
They'll cut
castle.
Off your hands and put them on
They'll
spikes.
Put me in the stocks and throw comic relief noses at me.
They will. They'll get Chris Moyles to throw comic relief noses at you.
There's no greater humiliation. So, last week, Song Wars listeners was a Kate Nash sort of a parody sort of a thing. Playoff, fight off.
Mess.
And we both recorded songs that were supposed to sound a bit like Kate Nash. They were both about bums by complete coincidence. We decided that that was pretty much the defining factor of a Kate Nash song. Mm-hmm. Mine was called Itchy Bum. It was very short. And I, myself, hated it.
Did you?
No. Don't like it at all.
Really?
No.
Didn't stick in your head at all?
It was just, as I said last week, the combination of my voice speeded up and a stylophone.
Stylophone.
Was just too annoying.
Well, I met someone in the week who said that they couldn't get Itchy Bum out of their head.
Were you in a hospital?
No, it was a normal human.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's very nice of them. I have been singing your song all week.
Bums and binge drinking...
Binge drinking and bums.
I don't like to go so down tempo-wise, do you know what I mean? That's not a good sentence, but usually when you open GarageBand, it defaults to
That's
one,
another conversation.
120
I've got
BPM. And it's always in the key of C. And I usually just stay there at 120 BPM because that's a
actually,
good...
Actually, one of the defining factors of Kate Nash's songs is they're all in a particular key.
Yeah.
And she sings in a very particular key.
I think she's in
between two keys. Is she?
I think so.
I wouldn't know. So we've got lots of emails in voting, and often when people vote, they put one or two little comments. And I'm going to read a couple that illustrate the gulf in people's views of Song Wars. For instance, Paul Davey says he gives his vote, which I won't reveal. Oh, maybe I will. He says, I'm going to vote for Adam's song, although Joe's was also very good.
That's nice.
They were very Kate Nash-esque lyrics. You should make sure she doesn't rip them off for her next single. I think this was, all told, the best Song Wars so far.
Wow.
Whereas Sarah Gauthier says, have to say, I was a bit disappointed with this week's offerings. Had very high hopes for the Kate Nash off.
I love the idea of her sat there all keyed up with a little glass of champagne.
Champagne?
And then she hears the songs and she pours the champagne back in the bottle.
How disappointing. I think I will go and see
Barbara
this morning.
Very disappointing. Listen, Tammy, I'm not coming over after all. I know we had a fun Saturday planned, but I'm a bit disappointed because of Song Wars. And so I'm going to stay home and just maybe paint the walls or cry. So I'll see you later. Anyway, shall we open the envelope?
Sure. Here's the envelope. It's a genuine envelope.
It is. It's all sealed and everything.
It's sealed. You know, I'm going to lose... My prediction is I lose this by about... I'd say it's about 40-60.
You reckon?
Yeah. No, that's even too flattering.
That
would be... I'd say it's 70-30.
That's what you deserve.
Might even be 80-20.
No, surely not. I think it'd be closer than that.
Hmm.
What is it? Oh, he's won. You're joking.
No, I haven't won. Joe gets 38%. Adam gets 62%.
That's all right. You can live with that.
So where does that fit on the... I don't mind. Where does that fit on the grumpy meter? No, you've won, so that's fine. So what am I allowed to be slightly sulky?
I'm delighted. Yeah, slightly sulky. But you didn't even like your track.
No, I think it would be awful to hear it again. Our producer's winding us up. You can't do that the day after we've won.
Oh, no, because we're going into the news. So listen, we've got to play...
She can do that.
Here's the winning track. This is Bums and Binge Drinking.
I was a bit depressed today, so I started thinking about binge drinking around 3 o'clock. So I went and done a little knock on the door of my best friend Mandy and my boyfriend Andy. He was Randy, I could tell, cause he kept looking at my bum like he was some kind of pervy bum fan. Bums and binge drinking and bums. When I get depressed, I like to go binge drinking with my chums. Why are you depressed, said Mandy, but not Andy. When we was at the shops, buying Alka Pops, Mandy never stops asking me questions like that. So I told her, Mandy, it's the media, they make my bum feel fat. I have to go binge drinking just so I can deal with that. Bums and binge drinking, drinking and bums. When I get depressed, I like to go binge drinking with my chums. La 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 la, rooty-toot, yeah, what I'm feeling, oh so blue. My bum is not quite perfect and my boyfriend's rubbish too. Oh my gosh, I was so drunk that night, I threw up on Andy and we had a big fight. Then Mandy puked and then we had a meal, and later on we all watched Balls of Steel. Then I felt quite happy, then I was sad, and I thought, I wonder how many drinks I've had. And then I threw up and then I passed out. It was so embarrassing, my bum was hanging out. Bums and binge drinking and bums. When I get depressed, I like to go binge drinking with my chums. Bums and binge drinking and bums. When I get depressed, I like to go binge drinking with my chums. Bums and binge drinking, what binge drinking and bums. When I get depressed, I like to go binge drinking with my chums. Bums and binge drinking, what binge drinking and bums.
There we go, that's the winning Song Wars song composed by a young artist called Adam Buxton, who's going to go places.
Thank you very much. I'm to the lavatory, in fact, very shortly. But right now, here is Harvey Cook with the news.
Oh, what a frightful noise.
That's Duke Spirit, man.
That's a wicked noise.
Get down with the spirit,
I
yo.
I am down with it. I was joking.
That was Love is an Unfamiliar Name.
Awesome.
My name's Adam Buxton.
My name's Joseph Murray Cornish.
Oh, going for the middle name.
As in mints.
Right. Have got any other middle names that you're not telling us about?
No.
Just the three?
No.
What's the Murray for?
It was my grandfather's, my mother's father's name.
Right.
So don't cuss it, man.
I'm not going to cuss the Murray here. There's no need for slapping. I've got a middle name, but I never use it. And you shouldn't have just let it out of the bag.
Is it O-R-D?
O-F-F-O-R-D. It's Welsh.
Offord.
And it means the way, apparently.
Does it?
I don't ever use it, no, because it's a ludicrous
name. That's like Yahweh. That's like a name for some kind of prophet.
What's Yahweh?
Yahweh is a word for Jesus.
Is it?
The way, yeah.
I'm like Jesus.
Well, that's what I was implying. And now you've agreed, so we can move on.
Okay, good.
Now that we've settled that. Hey, this is Adam and Joe on BBC Six Music, the BBC's premier digital music station, which plays you the best in contemporary and music from the past, as well as the occasional track from live sessions recorded here at the BBC.
It's all the best music and the best chittle chattle.
It is.
In my opinion, my humble opinion. Mm. I bumped into this guy yesterday, this youngster, as we were going into this award ceremony, which we're going to tell you about later on in the show. But this
mentioning it as often as possible.
Yeah, this young whippersnapper man, he was interviewing me for some kind of online TV channel. I don't know, it's all happening. And I commented to this guy that he looked very much like Beck. I said, "You look like Beck." And he said, "Who's Beck?"
No.
That made me feel about 95. I mean, this guy must have been in his early 20s, you know, not much younger than that, surely. And he was good, intelligent, funny, presenting man, and, you know, all snappily dressed, and he did look like Beck. And so I thought, you know, he's going to get that reference. Who's Beck? It made
That's
me
strange,
feel like a flipping granddad. Is there a whole generation of people who just haven't got a clue who Beck is?
Well, that brings a certain amount of credulity to the scene in I Am Legend where the woman hasn't heard of Bob Marley and has only heard of Damian Marley. Maybe there are people out there who have kind of Bermuda Triangles in their heads.
Take all these things for granted. You know, I mean, I've got the decency to know who the last of the shadow puppets are, for goodness sake.
I don't.
He doesn't know who Beck is? That's a total disgrace. What kind of things are they teaching people in schools these days? Where's the Beck Studies department? They need new teachers there. Now, have you got a track coming out? Oh, no, it's after the Shadow Puppets, right, is your track.
Is it? Are we having the Shadow Puppets now?
Here's the Pupples with Age of Understatement. That's the last Shadow Puppets with the Age of the Understatement.
Are they the last Shadow Puppets, or are they merely last Shadow Puppets?
I think they're just the last Shadow Puppets.
Really?
Yeah,
it's
yeah,
not what
yeah.
it says on the sheet of paper.
No, I think they just, it's all informal.
It's hard to tell these days, isn't it?
Thing. Yeah, it's good though, isn't it? Bit of Scott Walker-esque fun from the Shadow Puppets. When's their album out? Quite soon, though, isn't
it? Quite soon. Isn't it not out already?
I don't think so. I get the feeling it's out towards the end of the month, but I might have to check my facts there. Okay. Now, you've got a track coming up that you've chosen for our listeners, right?
That was, you just heard very sort of cutting-edge contemporary music by two important young artists.
Albeit kind of retro.
Yeah.
In feel.
I'm going to play some music for kids now. Because I think we've got quite a lot of younger listeners. Quite a lot of families listen, I think, for which we can only apologise for some of the things we say. But here's some music that kids might like. This is from my favorite Disney soundtrack to the Aristocats. It's not the greatest actual Disney film.
It's pretty good, though.
It's a great story. The animation isn't quite up to scratch, I'd say.
Easy.
It's I'm being very high standards when it comes to dismal films.
It's got a nice, scratchy feel to it.
Yeah, it certainly has. As if it was animated by cats.
Yeah, yeah.
Themselves.
The cast of cats.
Who put ink on their pointy claws.
Yeah.
Scratched the thing. Anyway.
What kind of tracks have we got on the Aristocats album?
Oh, it's everyone's a classic. It's my favourite. Have I said that already in the last minute?
Maybe.
Walt Disney soundtrack.
It's very.
It's got such classics as Scales and Arpeggios.
When the little cats are playing on the piano there.
That's a sweet one.
It is a sweet one.
It's got some lovely instrumental numbers on it. It's got the classic Everybody Wants to Be a Cat.
Everybody wants to be a cat. That's amazing, that one.
What language was that?
That's the song.
Was that French?
Because the cat's the only cat. Who is that singing?
Who knows where it's at? Well, they tried to get Mr. Famous Man.
Louis Armstrong.
They tried to get Louis Armstrong. They couldn't afford him.
Right.
I believe I'm right in saying. So they went for some other guy whose name is probably on here, performed by Phil Harris. Scatman Crothers sings on it.
There you go.
There you go, who some listeners may know from the film The Shining.
Yeah, well, he's definitely the guy on Everybody Wants to Be a Cat, you can tell.
But this is my favourite track. It's called Thomas O'Malley Cat, and it has a very interesting kind of spoken word intro that goes, I like a chicharrón like they made at home, or a healthy fish with a big backbone. I'm Abraham de Lacey. And the horns come in.
Giuseppe Casey.
But for years, I've never been able to figure out what any of that was that was being said at the beginning of the song. Mm. I like a chicharrón. I like a chicharrón. What is that? I've got the lyric book here. A cheech, as in Cheech and Chong.
Yeah.
Chicharrón. Is that like a... It must be a snack. Like it's a Tootsie Roll or something like that.
Well,
or
this is all the part of the joke, locating it in the sort of jazz milieu, was that they were all using kind of hep jazz speak.
Absolutely.
So presumably that's got to be something maybe a little bit subversive.
Like they make at home.
Right.
So it must be a food, mustn't it? I'm sure someone will tell us. Or a healthy fish with the big backbone. Mm-hmm. That's average for a cat.
They wouldn't put any kind of crazy drug references in there, would they?
Maybe. I'm Abraham de Lacey?
Yeah.
Who's that?
Well, it's just nonsense. I googled those names.
Did you?
Giuseppe Casey.
Giuseppe Casey.
They only turn up with reference to the Aristocats. I don't think they're famous people in their own right.
Oh, well, let's hear it anyway. This is Thomas O'Malley from the Aristocats. Oh, fantastic.
Very good.
Thomas O'Malley Cat from the soundtrack of the Aristocats.
What's the guy's name again that sings there?
His name is Phil Harris.
Phil Harris, who does Baloo as well.
There you go.
Be nice to see a picture of Phil Harris. I might try and
You will it. Never see one.
Never?
No, there was never a picture taken of him.
Because presumably he was an actor
He was a vampire.
It's like when you see some of the cast of The Wizard of Oz turning up in other roles, you know what I mean? Like the Cowardly Lion or whatever. Mm. It's a shock to see their actual faces there.
Without all the makeup on.
Yeah, but you know what I mean, like doing...
It's a shock to see your actual face.
That's true.
Listen to your voice all the time, but looking at your face, I mean, God.
It's a little bit of a shock. Well, imagine what it's like for me. I have to get up every morning with it. It's a disgrace. Awful. You're listening to Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. We've got a... is this a trail for Sean Keaveney here? Oh, this is going to be fun, man, because I love trails and I love Sean Keaveney, so it's like a double dose of delight for me.
Junks, man.
Here we go.
I would have put a Whistling Pops solo on that.
Yeah, they that was Jesus and Mary Chain, recorded for the John Peel Show on Radio 1 on the 29th of October, 1985. And what they did is they got the Reed brothers from the Jesus and Mary Chain. They popped them in a big wheelie bin and they lowered a microphone down there and they played the song from the bottom of the massive, great steel wheelie bin.
Did they?
And that's how they done it.
Yeah. They were used to clean chimneys a lot. As well, weren't
they? The Jesus and Mary Chain.
Yeah. Because of their similarity to chimney brushes.
That's true.
But people would just grab them by the winkle pickers, shove them up a chimney.
Up the chimney.
Because their hair was all...
Yeah. Big. And they'd go up with white shirts, they'd come down and they'd be all spotty. And it fitted in with the image.
Tup and take me, please, governor. Off to record a depressing song.
They were Scottish, though, I think.
Yeah, exactly. They've reformed, haven't they? They're touring again.
Yeah, they're around.
Yeah,
good for them.
They're getting on, I think, because they were a famous pair of warring siblings before the Gallaghers, you know. They used to have little punch-ups on stage there and stuff. They loathed each other.
Really?
Sometimes, yeah, but I think they've buried the hatchet.
Like us?
So, I loathe you.
That's true. I do. Mm. Actually, I
do.
I do. I do. I loathe myself.
I do also.
I loathe myself also. What are we doing? Okay. So listen, folks, we won an award. That's amazing. Don't you reckon?
You said that really intimately. Into the mic, really intimately. It was quite troubling.
Did you get creeped out by it?
It's made my testicles contract.
You didn't have to say that. Why would you possibly have to...
Because someone will laugh.
Give people that piece of information.
One listener might laugh.
Well, listen, we're excited about it. We won this award.
It does happen.
Oh, stop talking about it.
It's part of the life of a man.
Move on.
Like a weather vane. A fleshy weather vane.
Anything else?
God, no, that's
on the subject.
Move on.
Oh, now we can move on. So listen, we won this BPG award. The BPG is the Broadcasting Press Guild or the British Press Guild?
Broadcasting Press Guild. It's made up of journalists who write about the media.
Yeah.
And they have an award ceremony every year. It's quite an intimate affair. About 300 people there, maybe fewer, 200. At the Theatre Royal, Drury Lane. It was very exciting. We were nominated with quite a high-powered field. Moyles.
Chris Moyles, the news quiz.
Beyond Belief.
A show called
Radio
Beyond Belief.
4 series. We thought we didn't have any chance of winning. But who knew we won it, and we had to go up and make a speech and everything. There was a kind of a posh dinner.
We hadn't really prepared anything, you know, because the only other award we've ever won in our lives was 10 years ago, and it was an RTS award.
I won some awards at school.
Did you? You haven't won anything since, though, have you, for any of your solo outings?
No.
Thank goodness, I'd be absolutely outraged. But we won the RTS award years ago, 10 years ago, for the Adam and Joe show. And at that award ceremony, you didn't even have to say anything. In fact, they asked you not to say anything on stage. You just went up.
I like it.
You shook Carol Vorderman's hand, pinched her bottom, and got your award and left the stage.
It's very nerve-wracking sitting there waiting for your turn to go up, as I'm sure a lot of listeners will appreciate. You know, you listen to everybody else doing their speech, and everyone else was very impressive. James Gordon from... Well, first up was Andrew Marr.
Andrew Marr. So Marr wins the first award, and he comes up and he delivers like a little State of the Nation address. All
confident,
about
authoritative.
The state of the BBC and stuff. Very pro-BBC, but very balanced and, you know, exactly what you'd expect from Marr. But it was commanding stuff. And me and Joe were thinking, oh, no, we got nothing in our locker. Because we knew we'd won by this time, you see, because they only invite the winners to the actual do, we found out.
Yeah, we weren't communicating. We were sitting apart from each other with people between us. But
That was a ghost.
But we were both thinking the same thing. And then the James Gordon, is he called, from Gavin and Stacey?
Oh, yeah.
Came up, and the lady who plays Stacey, and they made a very funny speech, got everyone laughing.
Yeah.
We thought, man, we're in trouble.
We're in big trouble, Oggs. And then finally, it was our turn, and we were around about three quarters of the way through this ceremony, and maybe people were beginning to get a little bit tired and itchy, you know, a bit itchy.
And this is going somewhere, listeners. This isn't just a rambly anecdote.
So
we climb up on the stage to make our speech,
but
and
it was
we
already
really
it was
anything.
Already shambolic, because the guy, the journalist who introduced us, John from the Media Guardian, he got a bit nervous too, and he forgot to cue the clip. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're supposed to play a little example of what we do before we go up on the stage, and they were playing a little clip of us talking about our Kate Nash songs, in fact. But they didn't play it, and so we went up on the stage. As soon as we got to the stage, they started playing the clip, and then this photographer was sort of saying, could you stand over here so we can take a picture? So we were sort of flustered and...
But it was all right.
Yeah.
And then we had to make our speeches, and you made me talk first.
Well, no, I was thinking, so I said a few words just to put everyone at ease.
Did you? What did you say?
Do you remember my crazy funny stuff about, oh, this is the big award of the day? That's the, you know, I was talking about the clip that they just heard.
Right.
Because it sounded like an embarrassing clip, you know, and most people in the room clearly had no
clue who we were.
So
to cut to the chase, the long and short of it is that we took a kind of comic angle of being overly self-aggrandizing. Similar tactic. Well, you just said this is the big award of the night, right?
Yeah, but that was a total, obviously a joke. Yes, exactly. I know what you're saying.
We set the tone of, of no one knows who we are, so we'll kind of go the other way.
That's right.
As if we're amazing, which is always a tricky policy. It hasn't stood Ricky Gervais very well. People get angry with him, whether you think he's talented or not, because he's constantly saying how brilliant he is. Obviously, ironically, some people don't get the joke. Anyway, we went down a similar misguided path. And I ended up saying, now what did I say? Help me remember what I said.
You said, finally, this award proves that our show is much, much better than Chris Moyles and way better than the news quiz. And it proves categorically that our show is the best radio show in the world.
This was after some comments that were clearly self-effacing, right? I didn't just come out and say that. I thanked a lot of people very sincerely. Then what else did I say? There was something in between.
We called some people evil, ironically.
Yeah. Anyway, so we make this, and it wasn't a big deal. Everyone laughed. The room seemed to understand. Oh, before I said that, I explained who we were. I said, look, no one in this room knows who we are.
Right.
So we're Adam and Joe on Six Music. I told them when the show goes out. So it was clearly coming from the angle that no one knows who we are.
Yeah.
I wasn't pretending we were. I was clearly being stupidly self-aggrandizing.
However,
we descend the stage... Back to the table. There's only a couple more awards. The ceremony ends. Buxton heads to the loo.
Buxton goes to his favourite room, which is the lavvy, and I go in there, and earlier in the afternoon, an award had been won by the Top Gear team, and they were there represented by Hammond the hamster and a couple of their producers there.
Richard Hammond looking very like Mark Owen circa his Green Man album.
His eyes just seem to get bigger and bigger.
Big hamster. Big necklace with wooden beads, green tweed suit as if it was woven from moss.
Tousled hair.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I go into the urinal and there's the hamster.
There's two producers there from Top Gear as well.
Yeah.
A couple of producers all looking like kind of angry, cool dads.
They look like sort of cops from Life on Mars, most of the producers on.
Very, obviously very confident.
Top Gear.
And in charge of the situation, being a very, very popular and good show. I'm a big fan of Top Gear.
You are. You're a Top Gear fan. I don't like Top Gear.
Not anymore,
though. So I walk into the lab and the producer is saying to Hammond the hamster,
They're standing at the urinals.
Yeah.
This is a classic overheard at a urinal moment.
Yeah. So I walk in and the producer is saying literally this. Yes, you know, and they're sort of lording it over the competition and acting like they're really. And then he stops talking when I come in and Hammond looks over at me and goes, whoop, 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 makes that noise, right? And then says, button it, like that.
So Adam's convinced, and we're now convinced, that they were talking about us.
Right.
They didn't get the joke. They thought we were very arrogant.
And they thought, what, you know, who are those jerks, you know, rubbishing the competition when no one even knows who they are? And then when they saw me coming into the lavvy, they were like, ooh, no, we don't want to fight Buxton because Buxton's tasty. He could easily take the hamster.
He's tasty.
And, you know, I mean, I might have I might have had a problem with the producer, but I could have easily walloped the hamster. But I wasn't absolutely sure they were talking about us, right? So I was thinking, I'm going to find this guy and I'm going to go up to him and front off on him. Yeah.
Yeah. So the long and short of it is we're trying to create some kind of a feud with Top Gear in a way that people create feuds with more famous people, but so they can elevate themselves.
I went back into the dining room and they'd split because they knew that I was going to have. They were frightened. Hammond was quaking. He didn't, you know, he's fragile anyway. He didn't want to.
How can Top Gear think we're arrogant? That just makes no sense mathematically.
There's no irony in the world of Top Gear.
Music time.
In that way. Now here, we've got the top of our sweeper. Is that right? Love a little bit of sweeping at the top of the hour, and that's followed by the Strokes here on Six Music. Deedly 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 deedly. That's the Strokes.
We had a text from Will in Southampton who says he laughed at my comment about my testicles.
Did he? Good.
Yeah.
So job done.
It's like Saving Private Ryan, you know, if just one person appreciates it, then it's worth it.
If one chuckle is smuggled out.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you very much, Will.
You and me, man.
So final word, we're not going to say any more about the awards unless we hear from anyone.
Unless we hear from Top Gear.
Top Gear.
There is a possibility that, they were talking about something else. Awards ceremonies like that, where people in a particular industry are gathered with their peers and competitors, there's often quite a lot of inappropriate bitchy chat.
Yeah, but why would they have stopped talking when I came?
Because they're sensible men. They just don't want their intimate chit chat to be overheard by a stranger.
Maybe. Perhaps I'm being oversensitive, but I'm pretty sure they were just thinking, who are these guys?
Who are these upstarts?
Arrogant young tools.
Maybe. How are we going to find out? Can we send an email to Top Gear? To one of their producers? If anybody involved in Top Gear is listening, we need to get somehow in touch with... Who was it? It was the hamster and...
It was a silver-haired producer.
Right, who was all dressed in black.
Yeah.
Mm.
He was a little frightening looking.
An impressive man. Talented.
Yeah.
Powerful. Clever.
You love Top Gear.
I do enjoy Top Gear. I don't like cars.
No.
But I like Top Gear.
That's how much he loves Top Gear. He doesn't even like cars. And he loves Top Gear.
It's like Blue Peter for grown-ups.
I can't stand.
I love it, and I want to speak to the producers and, figure out this feud.
Yeah. Let's settle our differences and go for a big, long drive with some loud Thin Lizzy play. Now, we're going to launch Text the Nation, I think. Should we launch it now? Let's launch the heck out of Text the Nation.
Jungle. Is the jungle on standby?
No.
No. In any second now, you're going to hear one of the most superb jingles ever created.
It's award-winning.
It's an award-winning jingle, that's
award-winning
true.
Award-winning jingle. Here we go.
Here it is.
Text the Nation. Text the Nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the Nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
Yes, Text the Nation time. Listen very carefully as we explain the rules.
Here's how Text the Nation works. Joe and myself talk about a thing.
then we ask you to send in your thoughts about the thing. You can do it by text or email. You can send a letter, a telegram, a fax, a singing telegram, or...
If you're Yuri Geller, you can just think it.
You can think it. You can do skywriting outside central London.
That's true.
Anything like that. But I recommend text or email as a useful, quick way of solving the problem. And today, we're asking you to send in your thoughts or anecdotes about self-surgery, which we were talking about a little bit earlier.
We don't want anything too graphic, but... every now and then, everyone in the world gets injured in some way. It could be or gets something stuck in their body.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about self-surgery in films not so long ago, but we want actual instances of real stuff that you've done to yourself.
Something you've had to pull out.
We were talking about my ma tying a piece of string to my tooth and tying the other end to the door handle and yanking it out that way when someone came into the room. What other kind of things have you done? And Joe was mentioning, of course, that you can have a lot of fun. Things can get out of hand sometimes when removing a splinter.
Well, when you get a splinter and it's gone a little too far in, a bit too deep, and it looks as if the top's popping out and is easily graspable with some tweezers, but it just evades the tweezers. Do you know what I mean? It's never there. It's like there's a translucent layer of skin that you can't actually see.
Yeah.
So you start picking away at the skin.
Or maybe you don't even have tweezers.
Right.
All you've got, because my ma used to go at my foot with a needle.
Really?
Did you ever get that?
Yeah, I often have a go at things with needles.
Digging around with spots. The needle.
Let's not get into spot
spots
territory.
Spots with a needle? What kind of spots are you getting?
Ones with, you know, bubles on them.
Bubos?
This isn't recently, but when I was a teenager, I'd go at my pustulant bubles.
That is bad,
with
man.
With it disinfected. I used to run them under the hot tap
Did
though,
you?
First.
Very good. Well done.
This could
you
be still, quite
You get
grotesque,
scars, though, man. If you do that to your spots, you get...
See any scars?
Scars. Couple.
Do you?
No, not really.
But back to the splinter, and you end up gouging a massive hole in your finger, and the splinter still doesn't seem to be anywhere near the surface. That's what we're talking about, self-surgery. Think of the moment in the film First Blood when Sylvester Stallone rips his shoulder open. And he has to sew it together with a twig and a piece of vine or something.
Yeah.
That's one of the classic moments in the movies, but we want real life moments when you've had to perform self-surgery.
There must be some kind of show on a digital channel called Real Self-Surgery. And if there isn't, come on. Please, can we have one? It would be a delight to watch and hear the anecdotes of the people involved in self-surgery. When self-surgery goes wrong would be another way of looking at it. And that's what we'd like to hear from you for Text the Nation today. We'll read out some of your texts very shortly, but right now, here's some more music. This is The Kooks.
Excuse me.
Yes, Joe Cornish, what do you want?
I'd like to remind the listeners of the text number.
That's a good idea.
64046. 64046. 640-46. What's the best way to say it?
640-46 is quite good. I like that.
640-46.
Although it might be confusing. 640-46. How about that?
Yeah.
Or you can email us adamandjoe.sixmusic@bbc.co.uk. Here's the Kooks with Always Where I Need to Be. The Kooks, they're a band that stir up strong feelings in people.
Really?
They're from Brighton. And some people get very angry about the Kooks, you know? I don't really understand why. It seems to me they're a pretty inoffensive band.
I feel utterly dispassionate.
Are you? Yeah.
Nothing, flatlining.
Feel nothing about the Kooks.
No sensations at all.
Some people get furious about them, do you know?
Why?
I don't know. I mean, they sort of say, oh, the Kooks. I hate the Kooks. You know, I mean, there's a lot of people that absolutely love the Kooks, but some people, you know, it's as if they're really controversial. What is it? What's the deal? Is the guy just very gobby or what? I'm asking Claire, our producer.
I think what they do is they get the address of everyone who buys the records.
Yeah.
They trace the information back using hacking techniques. Then they just throw stuff at the houses and harangue, you know, the relatives of people who've bought the record. Oh, the Kooks.
The Kooks.
You know, they just go around and fuss around their fans' houses.
Yeah. Well, their band actually do
this. Yeah. Kick over their bins.
Kick over their
bins. That's how rock and roll they are.
Right.
You know, if you're going to buy Kooks, you buy into the whole Kooks thing.
Yeah.
They throw eggs at you on your way to work.
I didn't realize any of this.
In a big Kooks van, they do.
In the Kookmobile.
Yeah.
They just chuck rotten eggs and stuff like that. That sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that's why.
In the Coopmobile. There you go. That's interesting. Now, we're in the midst of Text the Nation. Are we in a position to read any of our listeners'
No, not yet. We're going to prevaricate. But just to remind you, if you've just tuned in, Text the Nation is about self-surgery, moments when you've had little injuries or things stuck in your body, and you've basically had to become an amateur surgeon or doctor on yourself. But before we get to that, here's a free play.
Here's a free play. This is from Captain Beefheart. Do you like Captain Beefheart, Joe? Have you got any Beefheart in your locker?
No.
You know, everybody should have a little bit of Beefheart.
He's in their heart.
You know, lots of people love the Heart Monster. The Mighty Boosh, they're big Beefheart fans. I mean, you know, obviously, that's just one of many thousands of people who love Beefheart. This is from his album, The Spotlight Kid, or is it... I'm not sure it is. It's Clear Spot. Yeah, which came out in 1972. It's a lovely song. It's called My Head Is My Only House Unless It Rains. Enjoy.
That's good, that, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
The Police with Walking on the Moon.
Sting, he has a hard time. People tease him for being a sort of an eco-warrior, even though he was very ahead of the game with that business.
No one teases him anymore for that.
They tease him for having tantric sex.
They used to tease him for, like, bringing... tribes people on from the rainforest.
Right. Didn't he bring a tribes person onto Wogan
something? Yeah, he did.
In a sort of like Marlon Brando when he was accepting his Oscar.
And the chap had a big wooden plate in his lip there, in his lower lip.
People didn't know how to respond.
People didn't know what to do. Wogan looked flummoxed. Sting was a laughing stock.
But now he's been rehabilitated, really. People don't tease him anymore because they realize.
Thanks to Al Gore.
Thanks to the planet catching up with him.
Exactly.
The planet going just as bad as he expected. Listen, Text the Nation this week is all about self-surgery. I'm going to read a couple of these out just to get things going. The text number is 64046. Here's a particularly nasty sounding one from Nick. Are you ready?
Yeah.
When I got a blood blister under my fingernail, I decided to drill through the nail to release the pressure and ease the pain.
What the heck are you thinking?
Do you want me to continue?
Yes.
I must have pushed too hard on the drill because I accidentally drilled quite far into my finger. The pain was so great that I quickly pulled my hand away and snapped the drill bit off finger. Is this real?
I don't believe that.
I don't recommend doing it. I believe it.
Snap the drill bit.
Who would use a drill to do that anyway?
Jeez.
You'd have to be very, very handy with the drill to control the depth to which it drills.
He's not using a big, fat drill, though. I imagine he's using one of those little, slightly more precision handheld thingies, you know?
There's one that starts off from someone in Australia. It's anonymous. It says, my friend Tom Briggs got a tick in his todger. Camping in Australia. My friend Tom Briggs got a tick in his todger.
Not a tick in the todger.
You got a tick in your todger, mate.
Hey, mate.
I'm having trouble doing a wee-wee. You must have a tick in your todger.
Probably got a tick in the todger,
there
mate.
There he is, cheeky little fella.
You should burn
Come
it
out,
off.
Come mate. So anyway, that's just a couple to get you going. What's happening now? Are we having another record
before
the
half
hour? Yeah. So keep them coming in, your self-surgery. You can make them more realistic
what
and less alarming than
what did he do about the tick
those.
In the todger?
Let's have a look. Sorry, I've kind of lost it. Let's leave that as a cliffhanger. We'll resolve the tick in the todge after the half hour.
There you go. That's the enjoyably addled sound of the Happy Mondays with Lazyitis. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music.
Breaking news. We've just had an email from the producer of Top Gear. Stay tuned to hear about that. But now here's the real news with Harvey Cook and the music news read by Louise Holland.
That's the Wombats with Backfire at the Disco, released on the 21st of April on 14th Floor Records. They're a Liverpool band. Their names are Matthew Murphy, Dan Haggis, and Tord Iverland Knudsen. Just to round things off, this is Adam and Joe on BBC Six Music. Happy Saturday morning. We hope you're having a great weekend so far. It's going to be wicked, we guarantee it.
What's the weather going to be like?
Cold snap. Winter's back.
Oh, apparently. No. I thought the summer had started yesterday. I was getting my shorts out.
Really?
Yeah, boy. When I got home yesterday, I cycled home. It was really warm.
It was very unseasonably mild.
By the time I got back, I thought, I'm going to get my shorts out. So I wandered around in my shorts for the rest of the afternoon. And then this morning I woke up, I thought, I'm going to cycle to the radio in shorts. And then as soon as I stepped out of the door, I knew that was a bad idea because of the snap.
So we're in the middle of Text the Nation. That was great, by the way. That was really good. In the middle of Text the Nation, and the subject today is self-surgery, and some really pretty revolting stuff's coming in, but I guess that was the idea. Some of this is a bit too extreme, though. We're looking for sort of fun things, you know, the lighter side of self-surgery.
Give us the most extreme one that you can actually read out.
Okay, I used a razor to shave off a spot on my face. Alas, it was a hemangioma, a benign tumour with its own blood vessel. It bled for 3 hours. I had to have a proper operation, Jim, in Oxford. Yeah, you asked for it. There's lots of good ones. My dad used his car keys to remove our splinters. It was a killer. And he was so bad at cutting toenails, I was scared of the task into my 20s,
right.
Says Andy on the Wirral. That's very true. Parents, toenail cutting styles. When you're a kid, and toes like to nestle together and curl up. They don't like to be separated and tugged around. Mm-hmm. But your mum and dad would do that. And then some mums and dads would follow the curve, the arc of the toenail very gracefully. But then you'd have a problem at the extreme end of the toenail, like how deep into your cuticle. Do you have a cuticle on your toe?
Yeah.
Like how deep would they go? Or other parents would just hack the top off, then hack the side off, you know, short back and sides, hack the top off, bung, bung, like a, you know, like half of a
hexagon or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, tough stuff, but...
Now that I'm a parent myself and I have to occasionally perform surgery on them when they get splinters, it's funny being on the other side because it's sort of enjoyable, you know, it's nice to do a little
bit
of surgery.
Well, you can't feel the pain.
Yes, that's true.
So it brings out your psychopathic, so your sociopathic tendencies.
But obviously, as a parent, you're keen to inflict as little pain as possible on the children, unless you really loathe them, in which case you shouldn't really have them. But, you know, you take a pride in how precise you can be with the needle and how, and because they freak out as soon as they've got a splinter and you get their scalpel out, they're like, no, don't touch my brother. And you're like, hey, don't worry. It's Dr. Buckles. I'm the king. I'm like a top surgeon. I will have this thing out in a jiffy, and you do all like distraction and stuff, but then they start thrashing around and you just have to hold them down because if they're thrashing around, Dr. Buckles can't get...
You're going to be arrested
good
at the end of this program
with the scalpel.
If you keep going. Kieran in Frinsbury Park says, I had an ingrowing hair in my neck. It took me 6 determined weeks and a selection of bloody needles to coax it out. It was 5 centimetres long.
Oh,
wow.
An ingrowing hair on your neck. That is grotesque. Presumably it was round the front, otherwise it would have been a mirror job. That's even worse, though. When you start doing self-surgery with a mirror, you're in a whole big pile of trouble.
Matthew says, I once removed a verruca with a Lego brick as a child. That's just a nice, sweet combination of an innocent plaything and a horrible, diseased growth.
That's not a good idea, though. What kind of Lego brick would have
I assume the pointy edge of one of those bricks.
Yeah, but you've not got any precision with those.
Yeah, but sometimes, and this happens with spots a lot, you have to use what comes to hand, don't you?
Lego?
You don't necessarily have the correct implements, so you have to improvise.
You hand me the red block.
Doctor.
I'm going in with the red block.
Nice. Here's Matt in Bristol. He says, I was pretending to be an alien with a circular TV aerial on my head. Something Adam and I can relate to.
Yeah.
It slipped and got stuck in my eye, caught by my lower eyelid.
Oh.
My mum and stepdad had to spend 10 minutes trying to remove it without damaging my eye. They did.
Ouch.
Oh, that's
they must
nasty.
Have been flipping out.
That's Louis Buñuel style. You know, eye stuff.
Chien Andalou. Yeah, type thing.
Yes. Nasty business.
That is appalling. Should we have some more of these after the next bit of music?
Yeah, keep them coming in. The text number is 64046. Keep them light, though. If you've actually had to go to hospital, I don't think it counts.
Here's Rufus.
Fix it yourself.
Rufus and Chaka Khan with Ain't Nobody.
Rufus and Chaka Khan with Ain't Nobody.
Chaka Khan.
This is Adam and Joel on BBC Six Music.
We were just discussing the fact that it's a nice song, Ain't Nobody There. It's a disco classic, really, isn't it? But to me, that you know, that sounds very similar to Whitney Houston, Yeah, I Want to Dance with Somebody, that kind of thing, you know? Claire's shaking her head there. Claire's filling in.
I think the production style is very different. I'd agree that the sort of song structure is not dissimilar, but then Whitney Houston's song was probably inspired by Rufus and Chaka Khan. You know, that's a stone-cold classic.
Yeah, but so's, yeah, I want to dance with somebody.
True, we'll play that next week. You can have that as a free play next week.
I like that one. That's one of those songs that reminds me of being on a good holiday, you know? I was the right age when that came out. Dancing around on a disco floor on my own with no girls. It was good. Now, listen, folks, we got an email from the producer of Top Gear. Is he the producer? Because I thought the guy that was in the urinal was the producer.
Well, let's just bring people up to speed if they've just tuned in. We won an award the other day, and Top Gear also won an award at the same ceremony, and we made a sort of humorously arrogant speech. I made a humorously arrogant speech. Everyone in the room seemed to get it. But then when Adam went to the loo, he walked in on Richard Hammond and the producer of Top Gear discussing our acceptance speech.
Apparently discussing.
We can't be entirely sure, but what Adam overheard was this.
I went into the urinal and the producer was saying, yeah, you know, and they're just like rubbishing the competition as if they were some like, and then he stopped and Hammond went, ooh, ooh, ooh. As I walked
every time you tell the story, it gets small. The quote gets smaller and smaller.
It was only one line, but it was enough.
Really,
and that in tandem with him saying ooh, ooh, when I came in, and then saying button it.
So we're convinced that the producer and presenter of Top Gear think we're arrogant, which coming from them, I'm not saying they're arrogant, but I am. if you get that difference,
brilliant.
No, but in a good way, they deserve to be. You know, we're trying to get a feud going here and it's working, because here's an email from the producer of Top Gear, Patrick Doyle, and I quote, now listen up, you two, let's get this thing straight. I better read this in a more sort of aggressive Top Gear style.
Yeah.
Now listen up, you two, let's get this thing straight. My name's Pat Doyle. I'm the series producer on Top Gear.
The Doyler, the Doylemeister.
The Doylet. Flush your Doylet. I wasn't at the awards yesterday, brackets, we've won so many already I couldn't be bothered to go along to yet another one, close brackets. However, the grey-haired bloke you saw chatting with Hammond would have been Andy Willman, the executive producer. He's the big boss of Top Gear and his word is law, capitals.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you thought your speech was out of order, then it was out of order. Up to now, we've had no beef with your little show, but you're on our radar now. Back off, Adam and Joe, or get ready to rumble.
There you go.
Wow, he's like citing Ant and Dec there.
Yeah.
As a throwdown. That's now, tough talk.
I should say that I think I've met Pat before, and he's very nice, and he sounds nothing like the guy that you did. I've deflated your email.
You've utterly deflated Patrick's brilliant posturing. And our whole dramatic panto-style build-up of the feud.
But it's the big British castle. For the sake of balance,
We have to be honest.
I have to point out.
We'd like to remind you that this feud with Top Gear is a charade and merely created as entertainment to draw you
It's not. Well, Pat wasn't there.
Might be real. He doesn't know. He's going to find out. Patrick, if you're still listening, we'd very much like you to speak to the hamster and also Mr. Black Smock.
Well, what's he called? Andy Millman. He's got the same name as the guy on Extras.
Yeah, there you go.
Andy Willman.
We'd like you to speak to them and just find out what they were talking about in the bog, whether it pertained to us, and get back to us. That would be brilliant. We'd be really grateful. And, you know, we'd be especially grateful if Adam was right and there was a feud, because that would be wicked.
And then I'm prepared to fight the hamster. I'm not so
wow,
keen.
Wow, you're courageous. You're a big man,
guys. They look frightening. Now here's a free play. This is Joe's choice.
Yeah, what is it? Oh, this is a British funk band from the 70s. They're called, and as usual, we don't really know how. I don't think anyone knows how to pronounce their name. Simandi, Jimande, Simand. This is called Brothers on the Slide. This is Simande. You're still listening to with Brothers on the Slide. Could people hear me for the beginning of that sentence? No. This is Simande with Brothers on the Slide. Pronouncing that wrong, probably. How do you think you pronounce this band, Adam?
Simande.
Simande. Cymande.
Yeah. I wonder what it means. It must mean something.
I don't think it does.
It can't be a proper... You reckon it's a proper name there?
No, I don't think it means anything. I mean, it probably does, but just it's more convenient if it doesn't. It makes us seem cleverer.
Or maybe it's some kind of acronym. I don't know.
I'll do some research during the next track.
Listen, do keep those self-surgery texts coming in. We've got loads of fantastic ones, and we'll be catching up with those any second. Can we do them now?
Let's have a few now.
Okay, here we go. Now, we should make it clear, this being the big British castle, that in no way do we encourage or condone you to attempt to mutilate or self-surgerise your body.
No way.
This is not some kind of Johnny Knoxville jackass... Jackass.
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 That's the correct way to pronounce it.
I sort of swallowed midway through talking. That's not how I really... actually talk.
Come on, man.
It's not some Jackass-style thing. So don't do any of these things. Don't copy them.
No, yeah? Absolutely not. If you've got any problems there, any ingrowing hairs...
See a doctor or talk to your parents. Talk to someone who knows what they're talking about.
Give Dr. Buckles a call.
All right.
I'll be over with my surgery bag.
Okay. Here we go. Here is one from Milo, who is suggesting that a good way to get rid of a wobbly tooth is, of course, a Jersey toffee.
What's a Jersey toffee?
It's just a toffee, a very thick, chewy toffee.
Oh.
And that's a very common thing when you're a kid to be chewing a toffee and for a tooth to pop out.
I don't like the idea of chewing the toffee and kind of ramming the root of the jagged root of the tooth back into the gum in that way.
Your tooth coming out is a very important stage in development, and in dream psychology, when you dream about losing your tooth, you know, sometimes that memory of not having a tooth anymore, of it dropping out, can pop back into your head when you're in your, you know, when you're very grown up.
Well, they say if you dream about losing teeth, it's also an indication that you might have gum disease.
Really?
Yeah.
Who says that?
Some people do.
Because your teeth are hurting.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I guess that's possible. So that's from Milo, that one. Thank you very much, Milo. Here is one from Daniel in Blackpool. My girlfriend pulled a fishbone out of her own tonsil with tweezers.
Out of her tonsil?
Fishbone out of tonsil with tweezers. She wants to remain anonymous.
How does she get back there with the tweezers?
This is the joy of texts. You don't know any of the surrounding information.
Flipping heck, Tucker.
Ah, wow.
That's okay. Unbelievable. Out of her tonsil? Surely she would have had the tonsil removed thereafter.
Is that it, all we've got time for?
One more.
Wow, we're being ruled with a rod of iron this morning. John in Elephant and Castle says, I once glued my finger together with super glue when I fell out of a tree and sliced it open on a branch. Mum was not happy. Mum.
So what did he do? He glued his fingers
together. Used super glue as a kind of surgical glue.
Yeah.
Which is a really bad idea.
Oh, what? He sliced himself open?
Yeah, I think he's got the sentence a bit of the wrong way around. He sliced the finger open on a branch of a tree and he healed it by gluing it with super glue.
Wow, that's sort of ingenious, though.
Now, we once interviewed what's he called? Mr. About a Boy Man with the woolly hat.
Oh, Damon Goff, yeah, drawn boy.
Yeah, and his solution for, you know, messing up his fingers when he was strumming was to cake them in super glue.
Well, no, also he had cracked fingernails, because that's another thing that can happen.
To guitarists.
But my dad used to fix his nails with super glue as well.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes it is a handy solution, but again, you've got to be so careful with the super glue, listeners. Don't go messing around with that stuff, unsupervised, you know? Let's have one more, come on.
One more, okay. Here's one more. Tooth remover. Oh, no, hang on. No, let's just play that. I need to go through these, man.
Okay.
I need to sort these out. I can't just read them out randomly. Who knows what horrors I'll suddenly speak?
Here's the Mystery Jets. That's Young Love by the Mystery Jets featuring Laura Marling. That's good, man, and that's got a good video with it
as well. What happens in the video?
Well, it's just a very simple, graphic-y kind of video, and it's all shot from above. The Mystery Jets are all lying down on kind of roller things, and people are pushing them on the rollers up and down in the frame.
It's good, isn't it?
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do understand. Anyone who comes up with a sort of new visual idea for a pop video is pretty clever after all these years.
Yeah, I mean,
it hasn't been done before.
It's not entirely. There's other videos that use the same kind of things, but it's nicely executed, and it's a smash of a track as well.
Talking of good videos, and we'll come back to the Text the Nations in a second, have you seen the Argentinian gnome video?
No. What's going on
now,
there?
Now, lots of people will know what I'm talking about out there, especially if they read the tabloids and stuff, because I think The Sun had it up on their website and stuff. It's the latest spooky YouTube video.
Yeah.
And if all you need to put into the search field of YouTube is Argentinian gnome.
G-N-O-M-E.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is an appearance by a terrifying gnome. It's kind of grainy. It's shot on somebody's camera phone, and it's got three Argentinian teenagers sort of sitting on a pavement, as far as I can make out. One of them seems to be sort of putting a balaclava on or something. They're just joking, having little early evening jokes. And it goes on for a while, and you're lulled into a false sense of security, thinking, well, you know, what's the deal with this video? Then suddenly one of them says something in Argentinian, and the camera pans to up the street. And you can see it's nighttime, there's sort of orangey streetlight and shadows, and you can see a sort of figure moving on the left of frame, coming out of the shadows. Then the camera zooms in, and it's basically a gnome. A tiny little man with a pointy hat. Seriously, a sort of silhouette of him.
Right.
a lot of people listening will know exactly what I'm talking about because they will have seen it. And you think, well, hang on, that's just like a baby or maybe a jockey on his way home. But then suddenly it does these weird sort of dancey hop steps into the middle of the road, sort of as if it's holding something, pointing at them.
Uh-huh.
But the way it sort of dances and sidesteps in a weird sort of leprechaun-y, terrifying way is really genuinely unsettling and frightening.
Uh-huh.
And then suddenly the kid behind the camera just screams. Because at that point, it could go either way. You're thinking, is this ridiculous?
Fun gnome or a deadly gnome?
Exactly. And the scream does it. The guy screams a blood-curdling scream. Cuts to black. It's brilliant.
Is it? But so this has got to be a little virally CG thing, right?
I don't think it is. I mean, it's an effect that could be done.
So you're saying it's a real deadly gnome?
Well, I just love the idea that, A, gnomes should be made frightening again.
Yeah.
Because they've kind of lost their terrifying currency and mm-hmm. become tamed in a garden context. But originally, they were like, you know, disturbing psychedelic sprites in the woods.
Well, do you remember there was a beer advert not so long ago? Maybe it was quite a long time ago, with a kind of weird little...
A creepy gnome.
Gnome. And maybe it was for Mets or something like that.
But, you know, the idea that something that's kind of funny and silly in a book, if it crossed over to the actual world, becomes sort of instantly terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, like if Santa was real, how terrifying that would actually be if a guy really did climb down your chimney.
What are you saying?
I don't know what I'm saying. Don't worry. Just forget that.
Okay.
This isn't very good, is it? Playing the Aristocats, then saying that about Santa. Lure the kids in and smashing their dreams. But the gnome is mortifying.
And
if you haven't seen it, during this next record, do a little, if you're by a computer, do a search for Argentinian gnome.
Argentinian gnome, I want to see that.
I want to make one of those videos.
Yeah.
I really have always wanted to do a hoax.
All you need
is a spooky hoax. I'm jealous of that idea.
I'm going to look at this because people often say, like, have you seen the YouTube thing with the lady in the hot tub and she has a accident?
No.
She has a bottom accident in the hot tub.
Does she bake a cake? She lay an egg in the bath.
She follows through with laying. No, it's clearly fake. You know, I would say it's clearly fake. But people were talking to me about it. Have you seen it? It's unbelievable. I can't believe they captured it on video. And it's like, well, no, they didn't. It's fake. So I'm going to check out the Argentinian gnome and I'm going to rule once and for all.
I'm not saying that it's real. I'm just saying that it's very well done.
Well, I'd like to see if it's well done. Yeah, I'd like to see that. That would be good. Okay. Now it is I'm doing a little time check. So we don't usually do time checks.
Good stuff.
It's, what is it? Six, coming up to
11:06.
Coming out to 11:06 here on a Saturday morning at the Big British Castle. This is Adam and Joe, and you're listening to Six Music from the BBC. Talking Heads. Can't beat a slice of Talking Heads. That's Road to Nowhere. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. During that track, I checked out the Argentinian gnome on YouTube. I mean, it's got all the hallmarks of a classic viral.
What's it advertising?
Thing
gnomes?
One, I don't know, but sometimes virals are just made for the sake of themselves. You know what I mean? It's just a fun little sketch to put on YouTube. You know, first giveaway thing is that it's shot on a camera phone, right? I mean, that's a classic viral tool.
You're such a skeptic, Adam Buxton.
No, it's just fun.
You would be such a good person to have in a horror film where it turned out that things like that were real.
Yes,
because
that's
you'd
true.
Be so. You're a good person to have in any kind of situation where one's imagination runs away with oneself because you're very down to earth.
Because I'm thick.
You're not thick. You just have a generally, you know, quite not dismissive, but very, you know, down to earth attitude to things.
Yeah.
Case in point, the gnome. That's genuinely real, the proof of the existence of tiny men. Bugster, no, it's a viral, it's a sophisticated advertising. You'll probably find that a new brand of chocolate bar, the chewy gnome bar, comes out and that gnome is all over the place. You think those are trained kids.
It might be
it's probably
hats.
Shot by Vilos Zsigmond.
Mm.
Who's he? Is that the right way to say his name?
I don't even know who you mean.
He's a cinematographer. And, you know, when I saw that, I immediately thought, they're real!
No, what Buxton is thinking with his cold, brilliant mind is giveaway number one, shot on a camera phone. Easy to manipulate the footage. Giveaway number two, it's, you know, the kids in the... why are you shooting the kids on the street? Why do we care? So you've got, like, a good minute of setup of very banal
but
footage.
But that's skilled in and of itself.
Yeah. So, you know, why would they be shooting each other? Yeah, it's the kind of thing kids do on a camera phone. Yeah, but so what? It's like that advert, the road safety ad, you know, where the kids are filming themselves and suddenly there's a very frightening
Well,
accident.
That's just an observation of fact. kids film each other on camera phones. People film each other on cameras.
I know. I'm saying, listen, it's well executed, but I'm not fooled by the gnome. And then at the end of this setup, you've got the little payoff, and it's always a sort of grainy thing in the middle distance, whether it's a
kind and a of, nice zoom.
Yeah.
So you get close, but you don't get more detail.
You know, and you get in there, and you can easily ape the grain on After Effects there and fool around with right. it. Although looking at the video in question, I would say that they haven't treated it too much. They've actually used a little man.
A little man.
Yeah.
A tiny little man.
I wouldn't call him a gnome. But
his proportions are very realistic, aren't they? I'd call him a gnome, even if he wasn't.
Well, he's a little man, I would say.
Right.
I don't know what the politically correct term is.
I find it very chilling, and I'm afraid I think fairies, gnomes and pixies, because of what Al Gore has done to the planet,
yeah.
are coming out of the forests to reclaim their territory. I think it's going to be a war between woodland, mystical, mythical creatures and humans. That's a good film pitch. Maybe yeah. that's the twist to M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening
uh-huh.
that we were talking about the other week. Maybe gnomes. That's the twist that the gnomes are behind it all. And at the end, they come dancing out, sidestepping of the forests, singing gnome songs, smoking pipes, chilling stuff.
Smoking pipes.
Yeah. Pipes are evil. This is Adam and Joe on BBC Six Music. We'll be doing more Text the Nations in a second, but here's a little bit more music. Is it?
I've got the clear image of gnomes singing songs, though, with pipes as well.
And they're cackling, and then it freeze frames. Yeah, that's how the happening ends. This is Black Kids with I'm Not Going to Teach... What is it, You?
I'm not going to teach your boyfriend how to dance with you. Why would I do that? Here's Black Kids. I'm not going to teach your boyfriend how to dance with you. That's Black Kids here on BBC Six Music. And we're in the midst of Text the Nation. We're asking you to text us with your self-surgery stories. Have you got any there that you can whip out of your surgery bag,
yes.
Mr. Cornish?
Yes, some of these are quite confusing. I'm just going to read them out verbatim and leave it up to you to figure out what's actually being said in them. Okay, here we go.
And a reminder once again that we don't endorse the practice of self-surgery, especially not if it's resulting in really hideous accidents.
I'm going to pull my microphone now. It might make a funny noise. There we go. I had to pull my own toenail off due to it going through a cycle of first green, then black, after a meaty fellow stamped on my foot in the mosh of a quatsa gig.
Queens of the Stone Age.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah, yeah.
Says Denny in Reading. He had to pull his own toenail off. That's never happened to me, but it's something I fear.
Well, that's one of the brilliant scenes in The Fly, of course, is
when his toenails come off.
The moment his fingernails
But that
start.
Looks very painless, because they just lift away, don't they?
Yeah, but it's still a revolting thought.
It is a revolting thought.
To have nails that are so far gone you can just pop them off like that.
John in Newcastle says, I once accidentally stood on a nail on the way back from school. I had to pull it out. The worst bit being that my friend had to half carry me home, so we looked like we were having cuddles to the rest of the kids walking back from school.
Couple of dresses.
To John in Newcastle, the idea that somebody might think he was in love with another man
is so appalling.
Is worse than having nails driven into his limbs. very contemporary attitude, John.
That's
Welcome to the 90s.
That's frightening stuff, though, man. If you haven't had your tetanus shots, you know, because that's what they tell you. My mum always used to say, you know, when I would complain, I don't want to have the injection, Mum, please. Because in those days, now they just give you a sugar lump, right?
I tell you what they do now. They go, right, we're going to give you two injections. First one's going to be quite nice. Second one might be more painful.
Yeah.
Here's the first injection. There's no second one. That's what they usually do.
Yes.
So they trick you into expecting a worse one.
Yes, that's right.
It's a technique they usually use on children, but I think they still use it on adults as
well. In the olden days, they used to. It all used to be much more painful, and I would complain bitterly. But my mum always used to say, you know, if you cut yourself on a bit of jaggy metal or you got a nail in your foot, if you trod on a nail, she'd always say that, a rusty nail, you would instantly die from tetanus. But, of course, that's not the case if you have the jab.
Here's a text from somebody called Boo, who says, word. I once had my two front teeth knocked out while being chased by angry tramps in Oxford and tried to put the replacements back onto the tooth stumps with wood glue.
Oh, what? So the actual bottom of the teeth were broken off?
Two front teeth knocked out while being chased. tried to put the replacements...
The band.
...back onto the tooth stumps with wood glue. Surprise, surprise, they did not last long.
So he's got tooth stumps, though, so he didn't have the whole tooth knocked out.
I don't know. He just like... It doesn't make much sense that one, does it?
Broke. I mean, that's just...
Let's go to another one. This is from D, self-surgery, dot, dot, dot. As a child, my sister had really, really bad toothache, so she decided that a knitting needle was the right tool for the job. Prodding the molar... And pain was obviously not erased. What? She's had hundreds in dental bills since. So you don't self-surgerize your teeth.
Why would you want to? I mean, that's the last thing. You know, because a bit of self-surgery on your feet, which are very...
Well, there's no nerve endings in the nails.
Exactly.
Or in the sort of dead skin of the cuticles. That's the thing. If you prod something in and it hurts, the pain is a message... From your body to your brain, that means stop.
Stop it, will you?
That's why God invented it.
Like, you wouldn't, you know, if you had a little bit of a cataract going on there, you wouldn't say,
no,
I'm going to pop this terrible. One out.
Here's one from Paul in South East London. He says, not sure if this counts as self-surgery, but around the age of 11, my brother declared his own tiny war on bacteria. All well and good until one day, after a visit to the toilet, he decided his bum could benefit from bleach. He was wrong. On reflection, that's not self-surgery.
Bleach?
He bleached his bum because he was trying
guy?
To clean it. He was 11 and he probably saw some alarmist documentary that showed him microscopic pictures of bacteria. Realised they were all over his body, thought he was being invaded by some sort of War of the Worlds style alien, and decided to try and cleanse himself using toilet products.
He's a bleach bum.
Do not do that at home. That's a terrible
disastrous.
Idea.
Disastrous. You go straight to the hospital for that, yo.
Yeah, and here's one I simply don't understand. Maybe you can help me. It's from Esmeralda in Walthamstow. I pierced my own nose. Oh, here, right, so she's actually trying to do piercing. And this must be a thing that's common to a lot of girls. I remember when I was a girl, when I was young, my sister wanted to pierce her ears because my parents wouldn't let her.
Yeah.
So you'd get an ice cube, wouldn't you, and put it and numb the earlobe.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, lots of boys did it as well in the 80s and probably still now to have the fashionable piercings.
Yeah.
And you just numb it and pierce it. It's a bit like giving yourself a tattoo or something, you know?
That's absolutely madness.
Madness. Anyway.
I mean, that invariably goes
I haven't finished
wrong.
Reading this text.
Carry on then.
I pierced my own nose by sticking a cooked sausage into my left nostril, then stabbing a needle into my nose to make the hole.
What is the logic there that the sausage is going to cushion
the sausage expands
impact.
The nostril and smells good and is tasty after. And it fits. It was probably a chipolata. She was 14. It hurt and smelt for a long time.
That is absolute lunacy. Don't do yourself piercings, kids. Come on, what are you thinking about?
We'll have one final return to the self-surgery texts in a few minutes' time. If you've got a brilliant one, 64046, it's not too late.
Now, you can fire this track off, Claire, because it's got a nice little quiet beginning here with the guitar. This is one of my favourite songs by one of my favourite bands, Eels, who a lot of people don't have time for. They think they're an annoying unit, but I think they're great. And this is from the album Shooter Nanny. It's called Rock Hard Times. That's Eels with Rock Hard Times. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. Now, the older I get, the more concerned I become that I'm getting stupider and stupider. You know, like, one of the nice things about getting older is that you become a little bit wiser in many ways, you know, and you mellow and you find out a few more things about the world. I seem to be forgetting everything. I don't know if it's an early onset of senility or what, but...
It is.
I'm getting daft. Like, this, during the week, I was taking care of my young sons and... because they were on school holiday and we went into Borders. I was trying to placate them by buying them a little present and they saw something in the window of Borders that caught their eye. And so we went in there to check it out. And as I was paying for these little gifts that I was getting...
What were the gifts? I'm interested.
It was Hungry Hippos, a little game of travel.
Miniature Hungry Hippos.
Travel Hungry
Hippos.
That is
good. They've got a good eye, your kids.
Yeah, they liked that.
The full-size Hungry Hippos is terribly noisy, very clacky, almost unplayable.
Mm.
The smaller version reduces that problem in ratio to its size.
Exactly. It was good. Anyway, so I was buying the Hungry Hippos, and I was at the till, and I looked behind the man on the till, and I saw a big display with miniaturized versions of magazine covers on there. You know, like, well, pretty much every major magazine you could think of, it was a little pocket-sized version displayed there, like the cover of it. And it was an advert for subscriptions. You know, it was a display saying, you know, if you'd like to subscribe to these magazines, you can buy a little package and you're able to do that. I don't know if it's exclusive to Borders, but I hadn't seen it
before.
No,
other newsagent store-type things do them.
Right, I hadn't seen this
before. Yeah, so you don't have to fill out the form in the magazine and send it off. You just literally buy a subscription over the counter.
Okay, so I hadn't seen this before, and not only that, I didn't see that it was a subscription thing. I didn't read that. I thought it was miniaturized versions of the magazines. I thought, that's a good idea. They've brought out pocket-sized versions of your favorite mags. You know, like you've got a big unwieldy Empire mag or a Vogue or whatever.
Well, they did do that to ladies' magazines. A couple of years ago, there was a craze for making them handbag size. And I think some of them still are available in both, like, full size, coffee table size and handbag size.
But this was even smaller. This was like a almost sort of cassette size. I was thinking, that's brilliant. I love cassette size things. And I thought, look, there's a miniature version of Empire. I'm going to buy that. So I paid for the Hungry Hippos. And then I had to get back in the queue, right? Because I was so interested in finding out about the miniature magazines. So I said to the boys, hang on, boys. And they were all keen to get out and unwrap the Hungry Hippos. No, hang on a second, boys. I just want to find out about the miniature mags. So I went and queued up again. And I said to the bloke, excuse me, are those miniature versions of the magazines, though? And he said, no, that's... it's a display for subscriptions. For subscriptions, sir. That's not miniature versions of the mags. And I said, subscriptions. Sure. Okay. All right, thanks very much. But I just felt like the absolute stupidest person in the entire world. I felt ashamed that I had control of two young boys. Anyway, I just wanted to get that off my chest. This is Adam and Joe here on BBC Six Music. It's time for the news.
That was the golden frappe, wasn't it?
Yes. Le frappe d'or.
Yeah.
And that's the new one, I think, isn't it? Accompanied by a enjoyable video with a man hopping.
Yeah, it's from their album Seventh Tree, which was recorded in a 60s bungalow in Bath. And they're playing the Royal Festival Hall on April the 18th.
That'll be a good gig. The man isn't hopping. He's wearing a white suit and he's jumping down the street.
I can't believe you tried to convince people he was hopping.
Hopping. We had a little message from a clinical psychologist there, and he was poo-pooing the notion.
Or she
was poo-pooing the notion that if you dream about losing your teeth, it means that you've got gum disease.
Well, I'm poo-pooing her poo-pooing.
Are you doing a little poo-poo?
Yeah, because
on her
the
poo-poo.
Workings of the human brain are a mystery that not even someone with a clinical psychology degree can claim to understand fully.
That's a little bit dismissive of clinical psychology.
Well, then. You know, I'm on the radio and we're not. He or she can't answer back, so why not take advantage of that? It's time to resolve Text the Nation. It'd be good to have a jingle here, wouldn't it?
What?
Just to reassert the...
Yes.
Here we go.
Text the Nation. Text the Nation.
What if I don't want to?
Text the Nation.
But I'm using email. Is that a problem?
It doesn't matter. Text.
Text the Nation this week has been self-surgery moments when you've injured yourself in a minor non-hospital way and actually attempted to operate either successfully or failurely. Mm. What's the opposite of the word successfully? Disastrously.
Unsuccessfully?
Thanks. Here's one from Tom in Eastbourne. I had to reset my friend's arm after it popped out of the socket when we were camping.
Oh.
We should again say that you shouldn't attempt to do any of these things. Everything that we read out is foolish.
Mm.
And the people were stupid for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Always seek medical advice. Okay, friend's arm popped out while they were camping. He screamed like a banshee as two of our other friends had to pin him down to stop him thrashing, and I reset the arm into the socket. We were only 13 at the time, says Tom.
Actually, that's not a bad one. I mean, I wouldn't
do that.
Would you
I think that's something you see in films, but I'm sure it's not as simple as, like, popping out a Playmobil character's arm or an action figure's arm. It's not just a ball and socket.
Of course
There's
it is.
Sinew and ligament there. And what if you trapped something, a nerve? You don't want to... I don't know, man. I don't think you want to do that without training. Put it this way, I don't want you doing it to me.
I do want to do it on that training. I think it would be fun. I like the idea. And you talking about play people makes me want to do it even more.
Yes. Actually, play people's arms didn't pop out. Busybodies did.
Right.
Play people who are now called Playmobil.
Uh-huh.
I think their arms, that it would just snap off.
Busybodies. And, of course, with Weebles, it wasn't even an issue.
They didn't have arms.
No.
But they certainly didn't fall down. Here's one from Claire in Blackheath. I had an ingrowing eyelash on my upper eyelid. I knew I had to remove it and that that would involve a needle. But being on the delicate eyelid, I was really scared. But after lots of eye watering, I managed to get it out. I've kept the eyelash as a souvenir.
Ingrowing? Does she mean it's just curled in on itself?
Yeah, you can have ingrowing eyelashes. It's possible.
Yuck.
I wouldn't Very painful that. With a needle. No, that's really a bad idea. Claire, you're really stupid.
Hey, what about that one that you read out before?
In that respect, otherwise you're clever.
You know?
I'll get to that one.
Okay.
I'm going to speed through some of these because there are good ones. I tried to fix my Muhammad Ali boxing puppet. I was a tomboy using my teeth. As the spring had come loose, the said spring sprang back and became lodged in the roof of my mouth. My dad used a disgorger, a tool used to remove hooks from fish's mouths, to remove it.
Good
Gross.
Thinking, Dad.
And he didn't clean it first. Dad. That's anonymous. Here's one from Dominic in Cardiff. I fractured my fingers whilst driving across the Australian outback and had to use my daughter's Barbie doll leg as a splint. She wasn't happy and cried for about 70 miles.
Oh, dear.
What about Dad?
Hey, we never discovered what happened to the Todge.
We didn't discover what happened to the Todge. With the tick in it.
Yeah.
The tick in the Todge.
Got a tick in the Todge
there,
man.
I'll have to, like, rewind for that one. It's on a previous page of text.
Okay, so that'll be the coda for destination.
Yeah. A couple more?
Yeah, go on.
I once tried to pop a zit by getting the toy cannon from my Lego pirate ship, placing the end over the zit and firing a Lego cannonball at it. It didn't work. It was the most intense pain I've ever experienced. I don't recommend it.
What a loony.
Oh, boy. Here we go. And to wind up...
Oh, yeah, come on, round it the off. Coat hanger, man.
Oh, well, you'll have to give me a moment to find that one. I have to backtrack for that one.
Well, you've got your Cat Stevens track to play right now.
That's true.
Do you want to introduce this and then we can wrap up Textination for good?
This is from the soundtrack to Harold and Maud. It was unavailable for years and years, but it's recently been re-released on CD. Harold and Maud, a brilliant 1971 Hal Ashby film about a morbid young man who's obsessed with funerals and a weird romance he has with an older lady.
Mm-hmm.
They even kiss.
Mm.
That was the liberal 70s for you. So this is a great record, and it includes lots of very rare Cat Stevens tracks that were unavailable for years and years, including this one called Don't Be Shy.
But there we go. That is nice, I like it.
Cat Stevens with Don't Be Shy. That's one of my favourite Cat Stevens tracks, and that's off the soundtrack to Harold and Maud, now available after many years of not being available on compact discular.
Compact discs, a dying format.
Is it now? It's true. Solid State Media. It's all just ones and zeros, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. So listen, shall we wrap up Textination for good? We're having problems locating the tick in the Todge.
We can't find that text. It seems to have vanished.
But here, let me suggest this for you listeners. We will locate the tick in the Todge message and communicate the end of the story in our podcast. Okay?
Good.
So
good.
If you want to find out what happened to the tick in the Todge, then download our podcast. You can do that by going to the Six Music website and subscribing through iTunes or whatever. We recommend you do that anyway, whether you want to know about ticks and Todges or what.
Who doesn't want to know about ticks and Todges?
Exactly.
We should do a bit of fact clearing up as well, as usual. The British funk band whose track Brothers on the Slide we played earlier, apparently is called, their name is pronounced Shimonde.
Shimonde.
Now, we don't know whether that's right, but we assume all texts are authoritative. It comes in anonymously. It's a very blunt text, so it has the feeling of fact about it.
Yeah.
But that could be true. And apparently, the word Shimonde means... Oh, God, I've got to find this text now, and I've lost it. Yes, it's a calypso word for dove,
mm-hmm.
which symbolises peace and love.
There you go. They've even got a track called Dove, don't they?
They do indeed, yeah.
And the Dove features strongly in their cover art.
And another factoid that many people texted in about superglue and wounds is that superglue was actually invented as a military substance for bonding skin.
Was it really?
Three or four people have texted that in, so either it's a fact or it's just a group hallucination.
Yeah.
It was actually invented as a piece of kind of army medical kit during the Vietnam War.
It could be one of those urban myth type things.
Could be apocryphal.
Apocryphal, yeah. Certainly, we should remind you that you shouldn't go around trying to heal wounds with superglue.
You should be, but you shouldn't touch superglue unless you're over 60 anyway.
That's true. You need a license. You need to go on a course to handle superglue. So I think, did you find the one about the coat hanger?
No, there was a text came in about a girl. I'll try and find it. Who was following her mum home, and her mum had...
She'd just come back from the dry cleaners.
Yeah, she had clothes on wire hangers. Oh, here we go. I didn't want to read this out. I thought it was too much. Well, I thought it crossed the line.
This comes with a warning, then.
Adam dances across the line like an Argentinian gnome, hopping from foot to foot. Do you want me to read it?
Go on. With a warning. It is grim.
Warning. This is grim. When I was six, I was walking behind my mum, who was carrying dry cleaning on coat hangers. I turned my head, and the metal hook of one of the hangers went behind my eye.
Oh.
As I was six, my mum obviously had to perform the surgery on my behalf and get it out. But I was nearly blinded, as it almost detached my retina. In Acton.
Can you imagine how the mum felt, though? I'm sorry, she would have been in a terrible state, to say nothing of what it was like to have a coat hanger behind your eyeball. Thank you very much indeed for all your texts and messages there. We'll do our best to dig out the tick and the dodge and communicate the punchline in our podcast. Don't forget as well that we need... it's kind of too late for suggestions for... next week's Song Wars.
We'll have to figure out something between ourselves.
We're thinking maybe some people suggested movie trailers, fake movie trailers.
Yeah, that we'd have a bit of a break from songwriting and do kind of, audio-only movie trailers.
Yeah. So we might do that as a little aberration.
It'll be a surprise. Next week there'll be some sort of exciting audio-based competition. Text the Nation will be back, of course, as well as the thing that Six Music is best known for. The music. Yeah.
Speaking of which, let's play some more after this trail. We've got Midlake for you. That's Midlake with Head Home. That's pretty much it for us. Adam and Joe here this Saturday morning on BBC Six Music. Thank you very much indeed for listening and texting in. And
emailing.
And we'd just like to say once again that we won an award. And we're very grateful indeed to our producers, our excellent producers and our assistants and helpers here at BBC Six Music. That's Claire and Jude, who produces the show regularly, and Charlotte and Matt, who help us out here so wonderfully. We really appreciate your help. Team, yeah, team. And don't forget as well that a brand new podcast will be available tomorrow evening, Sunday evening. That's again thanks to the efforts of our team here who put it together so brilliantly.
If I can get a word in edgeways.
I'm doing my thank yous.
Yeah, no, that was all I wanted to say.
Yeah, okay. You just want to say, if I can get a word in edgeways.
Yeah.
Stay tuned for Liz Kershaw. I think I might be chatting to Liz very briefly, you know, because about Son of Rambo, which I think she saw.
We'll be back the same time next week, 9 a.m. till noon, here on BBC Six Music. We leave you in the capable hands of Liz Kershaw. Bye!